GMGM, everybody. Hello. Welcome to another Wednesday. Welcome to another episode of If You Know, You Know. So excited to be here. This is the show for Web3 creators and enthusiasts. I am your host, Belle, and each week I'm joined by Web3 experts to bring you the latest trends, opportunities, and perspectives from the creators who are shaping the future of technology and art. Nothing we ever say is ever financial advice, and it's always important to do your own research. But if this is your first time joining us, then welcome, welcome, welcome. We do this show every Wednesday at 1 p.m. Central Standard Time, 2 p.m. for all you people out there in New York, Eastern Time. You can also find us on all of your favorite streaming platforms. We are coming up on the 100th episode in September. I am so excited about that. That is 100 weeks of talking to legends that are creating and doing just amazing things in Web3 and NFTs and crypto. And it is just such an honor to be able to, shine a light on that and spotlight and learn and talk to amazing people. Today's person that we have on here, I am sure that, I mean, every single person in here should know who he is, in my opinion, because if you've been around in Web3 and NFT, the good thing is we have a lot of new people that always join our show, which I'm super grateful for. But if you have ever listened to any Web3 Twitter spaces or just, you know, listen to thought leaders in the space, then you know exactly who Steve is or NFT Bark here with us. I am so excited to have you here. Steve, welcome to the show. How are you today?
I am doing fantastic. Thanks for having me. I appreciate it. And 100, coming up on 100 weeks in a row. Like, hats off to you. That's awesome. I mean, that is that, or that sort of consistency, or 100 weeks, 100 shows. I mean, sort of consistency and dedication is something you don't see very often. So I hope you feel really proud of that. That's freaking cool.
Thank you. Yes, I actually am very proud of that, because we see it every day, right? I think that it's so much easier. We're going to get into it. But one of the things, Steve, that I particularly like about you, and that I feel like, all right, I got to get these people on the show. I got to get you on the show, because I am one of those people, crazy Web3ers persons who had a completely different life before Web3, before NFTs, right? And I pivoted completely into a new for sure have already encountered Steve, but maybe you didn't know all of the things that he has been able to accomplish. Steve, I'd like you to fill in, you know, if I miss anything on that, but you are the co-founder of DGEN Network, which is an amazing group out here with a super strong community, Starbucks Odyssey community lead, which I really want to get into that, because, you know, if there's one project that has done well and kicked it off and showed everybody how things should be done, it truly is Starbucks Odyssey. You know, you've done so much in the space. You're writing a freaking book on NFTs. Thank you very much. Tell me who you were before NFTs and Web3.
Yeah, first of all, it's funny the way this thing started is very sort of like surreal in the way that you talk about the self-doubt, the people saying you're crazy and all that stuff. Because in many ways, I actually think the reason I am, you know, continuing to push forward as hard as I am right now in Web3 is because I've sort of experienced what you just described my whole life when it comes to tech. So I'm 40 years old. And when I was, 12, 13 years old in sixth grade, I started really using the internet and I started building websites. I thought it was the coolest thing. Now, this is before Google, right? You had to learn HTML in some sort of way and then code things into existence. And I thought it was so cool that I could create this thing and someone in like Paris, France could look at it. But during that time, teachers, adults, friends, people were like, you're wasting your time. What are you going to do when you grow up? What are you going to do for a living? You're playing around with this internet technology and who cares? Like, what is the purpose of this thing? It's just a read-only thing on the internet. So I sort of pushed that to the side, even kept it as like a hobby. I'd still play around with it on the side. I built zones in these online Dungeons and Dragons text-based games, all this nerdy stuff. But having so many influential people around me telling me how silly it was, I just shied away from it. Flash forward to, you know, early 2000s and mid to end of 2000s. I was early to Facebook. Same sort of story. This is a dumb app where you just poke people. But at the same time, like, I got on and the first person who had me as a friend is someone I hadn't seen since grade school. And I thought, wow, how cool is it that there's this power of connectivity of this person who I've forgotten about, who has brought me back, who was a friend at the time, but I just haven't really thought about. And now we're connecting in this way. Similarly with that and Twitter, you know, Twitter, people were like, who cares what you ate for breakfast? I actually brought Twitter to a nonprofit hospital I was at in 2009. And they were like, this is the silliest, most pointless social network, right? And so Twitter and Facebook, again, I kind of stayed away from Web 2 and at best parlayed that into a job making very little money at a public relations firm. And then, you know, similar story. I got into crypto in 2017, 2018. The people who worked for me and my group at the time would see me whiteboarding like how Bitcoin and Ethereum worked and why it's, I swear they will swear by this. I liked Ethereum better than Bitcoin at the time, which it hasn't proven market cap wise, but I liked that you could build businesses on top of it. But then again, crypto's a scam. What are you doing? Market crashed in 2018. I left and I said, I guess they're right again. So flash forward to late 2020, early 2021, and I discover NBA Top Shot. My dad was a collector. I've always been a collector. And as I collect these moments, I start Googling what NFTs are, because it's like, oh, these are NFTs. And I see, and obviously Top Shot's built on Flow, but I see basically an NFT is a business or a piece of art built on the Ethereum blockchain. So I'm sitting here saying, this is the thing, built on the thing I was obsessed with in 2017, built on the thing that I was obsessed with in sixth grade when I was building on the internet. Like, this time I'm going to do everything I can to learn about this. I felt secure in my career. You know, the high net of that is that I led multiple disciplines at Progressive Insurance. I led internal communications when we sent everyone home for COVID there. I started and led their recruitment marketing department. I led public relations there. And then I was leading public relations for frozen food brands at Nestle. So think like Hot Pockets, Stouffer's, DiGiorno, Lean Cuisine, those sorts of things at the time of me discovering NFTs. And during that time, I went to every Twitter space, I asked every question. I got super into it. About 9 months later, I co-authored the first Harvard Business Review article about NFTs with my friend Scott Commoners, who I met in a Twitter space. We still haven't met in person, met in a Twitter space. He's a Harvard professor, and he's the person that I've written that book with. So long story short, before this, I was very much in the corporate, climbing the corporate ladder, doing really fun, fulfilling work in the communications and marketing space. But I've always had this tech bug, and the first several iterations of tech, I found myself kind of turning away because other people told me it was stupid. And when this one came along, I said, you know what? I'm just going to swing the bat and try because I would like to go. So I think that's sort of one of those things that motivates me is anytime I feel that doubt, anytime I feel people telling me how silly it is or wanting to tell me it doesn't work, I just think about the people who told me that the internet was silly and that web pages were silly and that social media was silly. And I start thinking about, and that crypto was silly. And I start thinking, okay, I might be onto something here. And if I'm not, look, my batting average can't be 1,000 and we'll go from there. But I'm having the time of my life.
I love that. And I relate to it so much. I always talk about how, you know, I was bred, I think, to think that climbing the corporate ladder is exactly what you do to be successful in life. And so that's what I did. I did risk management and insurance, actually. When you said Progressive, I was like, oh, snap. You know, we can talk about a lot of things, I'm sure. Yeah, I did insurance and risk management for many, many years. And I landed like, you know, the director of the office job. And I was very, very happy in it until I wasn't. And until I realized that there is so much more that I could pivot into that I wholeheartedly believe in. And one of the things that I liked about you when I was reading, and I was doing my homework and reading something, and you are a self-proclaimed marketing geek, but my favorite, two favorite things is incurable optimist and dreamer. And I 100% always talk about how, I prefer to be optimistic. And I wholeheartedly think that at no point in your life do you ever stop dreaming. And Web3, to me, the people that I have met in the community, like, embody that for me. So 100%. I know exactly what you're talking about. And I think that it is admirable that you were able to do that. Do people still think that you're crazy now?
A lot do, but I don't care. And that's what matters, right? And I've raised my kids in that way. You know, my daughter said the most wonderful thing to me recently where, you know, she, we were doing something and I was asking her, I was like, yeah, I don't even remember what it was, the context of the specific thing. But I was like, this thing when I was a kid was so cool and everybody thought it was so cool. Like, and now we're doing this. Do you think this is cool? And me just trying to say, like, is this thing that we're talking about still interesting to kids at your age is the way I was going with it. But she heard it differently. She was like, why would I care what anybody else thinks about it? I'm having a good time. And the fact that my 11-year-old daughter was like, it doesn't matter, I'm having a good time, this is for me. Like, she does not care what other people think and takes that out of her. And like, I take inspiration from her on that. Like, my daughter teaches me when I see the way that she is unapologetically herself, something I struggled with, right? With insecurities and trying to be this type of person other people wanted to be. And then, you know, I'm just unapologetically myself and it feels so much better because the masks we wear often say more about us than, you know, what's behind them. And to me, it's like anytime I've tried to not be myself when I've been in a job, it's been suffocating and it's been hard. And when you are yourself, it feels much more free flowing when you can bring your whole self to your job. And that's the beautiful part about this is that, you know, when I talk with, I mean, I work, you know, like you said, I work with Starbucks, one of my favorite companies ever. And when I'm talking to the people from Starbucks corporate, it's okay that I'm silly and myself and making anecdotes and jokes. Like, they're okay with it because that's a corporate culture Starbucks has established of bringing your whole self to work. And so I'm working with the right people there, whether it's on my morning show or working with Scott, who wants me to just, he wants me, like, Scott's like one of the, he's the smartest person I've ever met in my life. He's a Harvard professor. He's brilliant. You know, he's one of the top people in the world at like market dynamics. And he wants me to be me because he sees the value it adds. And then he brings another layer of it. So it's one of those things where, you know, people may say that it's silly, but that happens. And just to kind of almost dovetails into your other question there, which is, you know, incurable optimist. I agree. I think optimism is the way to live because it makes me happier. But that's me personally. Like, I actually don't have a choice. It's just how I'm wired. And sometimes I get crap because people think like, they'll be like, oh, like, you know, rose colored glasses or, you know, pretending you have this like perfect, and I never pretend I have a perfect life or anything, but like, I tend to look at things like my, again, going back to my daughter, you know, my wife's noticed this about me, like where in any situation, I look for the positive and I look for the good in people. And my wife knows this about me. And she noticed my daughter got this quality for me as well, where she was at school and somebody threw a crayon at her. And like, we got a call from the teacher being like, hey, just so you know, your daughter has a little bit of a bump on her head. There's a girl throwing crayons and, you know, we'll call the girl Jane at this point because I don't want to say any real names. And my daughter just goes, we go, did something happen at school? Is everything okay? And my daughter goes, yeah, you know, Jane was upset and she was throwing markers. She's like, but you know what the best thing about Jane is? The best thing about Jane is that, and she starts talking about something wonderful about this person who was throwing a fit and hit her with a marker. And that's just how, like, optimism, looking for the good in people. I'm not a sucker. Like, I can spot when people are being shady with me. I have a general good EQ at that. But the idea that when somebody walks up and you give them the benefit of the doubt because you don't know their lived experience, you haven't lived in their shoes, you don't know if they're having a bad day. Like, if someone cuts you off in traffic, maybe that person is going to the hospital to get stitches. Maybe they're bringing a pregnant wife to the hospital. Maybe they're late for a job interview. Like, I don't know. But how much is it for me to slow down, didn't get in an accident, and move a lane over, right? So like, those are the types of things that I think about on a daily basis. And for me, that's the healthiest way to live. I know it's not everybody and that's okay, but that's my general approach to life. And it's just, it's something that I think makes me. And, you know, again, it's not going to be everybody, but I enjoy it.
I have a friend who is obsessed with your show and, you know, I have listened to it many, many times. But it's right on the time from my, you know, my time zone. It's right on the time that I'm in the car with the kids, dropping them off, et cetera, et cetera. So I can't always listen to the entire thing. But my girlfriend has been telling me for the longest that the reason that she loves your daily show is because you are very, both of you are very real and genuine and nice. And when you said everything that you just said, I completely see it and I completely understand it. And I think that Web3 in the world could definitely use more doses of that. So for sure, kudos to you for just being one of the good ones, I think, you know, I mean, for just being a upstanding citizen of Web3. I think I'll just leave it at that. I think that it is amazing and that I can see why people, you know, would be attracted to you. During this time right now and in the past month, you know, maybe the entire summer, we have seen a change because, you know, obviously the bear market, with it comes so many other sentiments that NFTs are dead, that this isn't going anywhere, that, you know, you're just, is a fool's errand at this point, that it's never going to be mainstream, that that's why people are leaving and, you know, artists aren't getting their royalties anymore. I mean, it just goes on and on and on and on. And, you know, I host these shows on a weekly basis, and sometimes the conversation leads there to where people are just feeling the pain and the hurt and the weight on their shoulders right now. And you also have these conversations on a daily basis. So I really wanted to ask you, Steve, from your perspective, you know, what do you think about the time that we are right now? And for anybody that's maybe newer in the audience right now, what would you give, like, advice as to, you know, hang in there or step away and come back?
I don't think it's one size fits all, right? And so I have a couple different ways to look at this. Number one, if, first of all, you need to do what you need to do for yourself, and I'll never judge anybody. It's the same reason why, you know, my wife was working an amazing job where she was on this upward trajectory at a corporate, you know, public relations firm job, and we weren't seeing her and she wasn't seeing the kids as often. So she quit and she worked at my friend's auto repair shop. That doesn't mean, you know, people oftentimes say, like, oh, what are you doing or why are you there? And the answer is, one, every job is important. And two, we're doing what's best for our family, because for us, this is what makes sense. And in a similar situation, I see a lot of people thinking, like, I don't think leaving a full-time Web3 dream or doing something like that is giving up. I think people need to do what they do that is best for them. For what's best for me, personally, is that what I found is that in each iteration of tech I spoke about at the beginning of the show, I've maybe passively at best participated when people told me it was silly and when things went down or sideways. And for me, I know I would be a lot better off if I had stuck with it. Now, I wouldn't have those battle scars, which are a whole part of my story, so I'm perfectly happy about that. But at the end of the day, like, for me, the choice was very clear that sticking through it, regardless of what the ups and the downs are, is what I want to do. Because what I don't want to be doing is, you know, being, you know, 87 years old, you know, in a nursing home saying, man, you know what? I probably should have tried that. But instead, I contributed to corporate profit at the world's largest food company, which, again, love Nestle. It was an amazing place to work. They couldn't have been kinder and better to me. But, like, you know, if I want to go back to Nestle or Progressive or some large company, I'm sure that that is there. So for me personally, it's hanging through, staying tapped in and keeping up with it. I even had a conversation the other day. I, like, won't get into the specific details, but I talked to a person who had been out of the space about 6 months. They just kind of tapped out and were like, hey, I'm passively there. And we got on a subject. And I realized in just 6 months, he had become completely uneducated on the subject, not by anything that he's a smart guy, he knew what he was doing. It's just being here, the way this tech is changing day to day. For me, like, there's no option. It's staying through. It's enjoying the ride. It's learning about each iteration. It's watching new markets and new tech form. So that's, I think, one side of it. I think the other side of what you're saying is, you know, a lot of people are saying, like, oh, are NFTs ever coming back? And here's how I'll give kind of a counterculture answer to that. I have a different point of view than a lot of people on this, which is I don't see mass adoption as, you know, everybody coming in to buy my ETH bags. What I see mass adoption as is this technology bringing more value to consumers because it's accepted and not seen as sort of scammy or rejected. and also businesses using it to create aligned incentive structures with their consumers and empowering them. That's what I see this technology as. And so to me, mass adoption is, you know, people having their licenses and their housing information on chain. So decades from now, they can vote on chain and we can have a higher voter turnout because you can do it instead of doom scrolling Instagram for a 20 minute half hour, right? I see it as, you know, medical records being on chain so that, you know, instead of sending your data to 23andMe and they swab your mouth and they sell it on the back end and make millions of dollars on you, you opt into something because you have privatized on-chain health data. And they say, I'm looking for a, you know, white 40-year-old male father. We want your data. And I click a button and they pay me for mine instead of somebody else selling it. To me, that is very much mass adoption in those more mundane things, as well as the fun things like the clubs and the loyalty and the ticketing and all that. But, you know, will our ETH bags ever be all the way up again? I don't think like 2021, and I don't think that's bad. I mean, in Web 1, you had, you know, Amazon and you had pets.com. In Web 2, you had Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter, and you had Friendster and Daily Photo and, you know, other, you know, MySpace, which were first, right? All of those before. But different ones succeed. And I think in Web 3, we're going to have your Bored Ape Yacht Clubs, your Doodles, et cetera. And then you're going to have your brands that have to ultimately fold and call it. And I think that that's just sort of how iterations of tech work. And I think a lot of us, it was very popular in the bull market to say all of this is going to zero or 99% is going to zero. Now it's happening. And I think a lot of people are caught off guard by it. And I am too, to some degree, but I think that that's sort of where my head nets out as far as like, will people ever come back? I don't know if ever like before, but I do think it's, you know, it might, but I think it's more, the technology will continue to evolve and get easier and the tech barrier will reduce.
Yeah, I love that. I want to get into Starbucks, but before I do, I want to, now that we're a couple of minutes, you know, a few minutes into the show, I want to thank everybody for attending and joining us today. There are a lot of other Web3 shows that are happening well, simultaneously and very impromptu right now. So I want to acknowledge that and tell everybody that you literally could have been anywhere else, but you chose to be here with us. And I can't tell you how much I appreciate that. So before, if you are, you know, if you've attended before, then you already heard me say this, but for any of our new people, a few weeks ago, we kicked off a new partnership with Tao, in case you missed that, and we launched Space Caps POAP, where each week you get to collect a new Space Caps commemorating that week's special guest. So I just pinned up here at the top the Space Caps for today, featuring Steve. Steve PFP, it's not actually his face. But for every 5 POAPs that you are earning, then you qualify to receive an airdrop of 420 Tau BRC20 tokens. And if you aren't familiar with what, you know, BRC20s are, then I highly encourage you to go and research that so that you don't miss out. So make sure to go to that pinned tweet that I just put up there. Make sure that you're following me, that you're following Tao, and like, comment, retweet, and you're in. Our partnership with Tao is super special because it's set on the values that that to me like mean everything: trust, access, opportunities, and attention. And it's perfectly aligned with everything that we talk about, everything that we believe in. So go make sure that you see that you are participating, and that you are retweeting. All right, Steve, thank you everybody for that. Steve, I want to ask you about your partnership or your, you know, your work with Starbucks Odyssey. One of the things that as a market participant, just from the outside looking in, there are a ton of brands that have tried to come into Web3, you know, from the biggest to the smallest and everything in between that have tried to come in. Some of them very successful, some of them not so successful, and ended up leaving or being called a rug or, you know, everything. Starbucks was applauded as being one of the ones who truly understood what it took to appease or make happy those NFT native people, as well as just the general public. And as a community leader, I really wanted to ask you, what are your thoughts on what that recipe for success was? And maybe what can we expect from it in the future?
So like there's sort of two things in here. I think one is I'll give my observations just as an outsider, someone who isn't in Starbucks Odyssey, because I think what they did and the formula they had is what I see a lot of successful brands in the blockchain execute on. And then I'll kind of get into the internal workings of what it's like being involved with them. So for disclosure purposes, I'm the community lead. I'm a consultant with a company called Forum 3. It was founded by Andy Sack, Joe O'Rourke, who's Bunch You Bets, if people know him on Twitter, and Adam Brotman. Adam is a friend of mine, and so is Joe. I've known Adam since before I knew he was what he was before this, which was Adam was the former chief digital officer of Starbucks who helped architect sort of their mobile loyalty and payments program way back in the day, literally at a time when it would have been, you know, we have a story in the book about he was sort of almost embarrassed of the title of chief digital officer. That's how long ago it was. And then slowly he watched that come to fruition, and then it's become what it is today. And so him coming back to Starbucks with this, I think, is number one. He brings in credibility. He brings in the fact that he's built this before. He brings in his history with Starbucks. So that's sort of just some background on what the role itself is. To me, you know, Starbucks has done what a lot of other brands like DraftKings and Adidas and, you know, even Reddit to the same degree have done, which is they ask themselves really four key questions. What's the brand purpose? Does the blockchain solve a problem? Do they have the right partners, and how are they going to market? And looking at how they are, do they have a brand purpose? Look, if I come on and I decide that I'm going to create an NFT program and I'm Hot Pockets, and Hot Pockets is focused on gaming, they look at it sort of a younger eater, they're targeting mom. And if they came out in something that was completely off brand, targeting like, you know, I don't know, like 70-year-old women, it would be weird, right? Their brand purpose is very clear. Them being involved in gaming would make sense. Well, Starbucks has a brand purpose. Their loyalty program is so big that Starbucks is like one of the world's largest banks based on the amount of money people have stored in their app. So because of that, like a brand purpose of on-chain loyalty, which is a logical solution for the blockchain, makes a lot of sense. Does the blockchain solve a problem? Yes. It lets people own their loyalty in a two-way sort of manner. So, you know, Joe Rourke and Adam have talked about this quite a bit. It's like, you do one-way loyalty programs right now, and your one-way loyalty program is you go somewhere, like you get stars at Starbucks, and you buy things back with the stars. This is like you complete a journey, you deepen your relationship with the brand, you maybe answer some quiz questions about the brand to learn more about it, do a couple purchases, boom, you have this stamp, which is your NFT, and you can sell it or keep it for the benefits, right? So that's like, does the blockchain solve a problem? Do you have the right partners? I just mentioned Forum 3 and Adam, and then how are you going to market? And they started by sort of crypto native, and they've been legging their people in. So I just think they've approached it strategically. I don't know. Like, so that's sort of, I think, what makes their recipe to success. But we've also seen that, as I mentioned, when you think about Reddit or DraftKings or, you know, Adidas, like, all of them have varying answers to those questions, but all, like Adidas is doing gated drops. Nike wants to do gated drops. The blockchain solves the problem. So instead of getting gouged by bots, you could have token gated access. So all those things coming together is why I think a program like Starbucks seems to be working well. And then I'm lucky because they believe in the element of community. They believe in the true beta testing community. They've been very receptive to ideas and thoughts around the community. They have a regular feedback form that helps shape the program. So from my perspective, it makes my job really fun because I get to bring people in who, you know, are, you know, the guy who goes and sources coffee around the world, or, you know, the VP who's in charge of the whole program, or whoever it might be. I get to bring those people in and interview them in this private Discord about that. So I get to have a lot of fun with the community and play some games there. We're doing a trivia night tonight in the Discord, which is going to be fun. We haven't given quite what it is, but we've given a little bit of hints at what the trivia night tonight is going to be, but that we're going to give away some stars. So it's really kind of this convergence of like understanding the right strategic purpose. Because a lot of people look at NFTs, it's just like when brands would create a social media handle and it sounded nothing like their brand voice. It was completely disconnected, right? Similarly, if Starbucks is going to build an NFT program, it's not like this foreign thing. It's like, this is one division in our company that's integrated into everything else, and we need to make sure it's cohesive with the rest of our company strategy. So in any case, that's a long-winded answer, but I just think that they're very, and they have, last thing I'll say, they have buy-in up to the top. You know, people in the VP level and high levels, they know what is happening there, and they understand that, you know, this could, they understand the value that this brings, and literally down to the community, which makes me feel really heard and seen as a community lead. So I think that also is important, is that it's not this skunked work project by, you know, somebody's pet project who's like a middle lower manager who's in an innovation group they're cutting off. It's like it has very high level visibility. In fact, their CFO has talked about it. I think their recent shareholder meeting. So definitely has some high visibility. So that's why I think Starbucks has done pretty well.
Yeah, it's incredibly important. I think that sometimes it's really it's really common, I would say, really easy for it to happen to where there is that really, you know, innovative person that has learned on about it from a personal experience, works at a corporate office, launches this innovation, and it's never actually supported. And there is no buy-in from any of the executives, and it just completely flops. You know, I've seen it from different conversations that I've had with different companies, and just it constantly happens with brands. So yeah, I think that is an understatement of the year to say that that's part of the recipe. I would absolutely agree with that. What are some of the things that recipe for success on you personally building the community? I think that that's also something really important and something that we can't seem to sometimes, you know, easily quantify, like how exactly that gets done, because it's really easy to open up a Discord. It's really easy to open up a Telegram. It's really easy to start a chat, you know, but how do you actually attract people and keep them invested in whatever it is that you're bringing them?
Yeah, I think it's like understanding people, that people want to feel heard, because and are heard, like not even feel heard, because it almost sounds feel heard sounds like you're being patronizing. The truth is they are heard. You know, we have
this space was downloaded via spacesdown.com. Visit to download your spaces today.
Community group, and we've had discussions group where Starbucks leadership has come in and asked questions, and then we've seen those things implemented in the program. We've had feedback on drops, and we've seen that feedback implemented in the program. So I don't get to decide what the strategy is on the top level, but I do get to help bring the community and help highlight them and bring them to that world where, you know, they're able to get that visibility with the right people and ultimately provide that proper feedback. So, you know, to me, like, that's, I think, you know, one of the things they love is feeling heard and also understanding what they want. People are understandably spamming their drinks in Discord because it's a Starbucks Discord. And we're like, why don't we just have a show off your drink channel? So they sort of determine that. A lot of people use it so much that the last challenge we had actually had a show off your drink challenge. So like those sorts of things where they can see themselves playing out and feel themselves in those particular places. I mean, that's good. We have for active participants, something called the Coffee Bot, which is a really cool mechanism. You know, use my web 2 days of daily active users, where every day when you show up, you can give one person a bean and get one back yourself when you do it. So basically, it's sort of like if you show up, you know, if you do something nice in the community, or let's just say I show up, you can sort of give someone a hot coffee, give someone a breakfast sandwich, give someone a hot drink, or give someone a cold drink. Like it's sort of a slash command, like a Discord slash command. And when you do that, it gives them one bean and you get one bean. So you can do this once every day. It resets at like midnight Pacific time. So then that's one way to earn beans. But then what you see out of this is you can also gift beans. So when somebody does something particularly nice, somebody will gift someone else's beans. Like somebody helps out a newbie in the Discord, people gift beans to them and gift beans to the newbies to get them started. And when we, you know, run a trivia night or have a, you know, a guest like Micah Johnson, the Aku Dreams artist who did a collaboration with Starbucks, we bring him in to interview and people ask questions in the chat. We give them beans as a reward. Those beans each count as a raffle entry to win 1,000 stars at the end of the month. So if people don't know, like 1,000 stars is going to get you a handful of free drinks at Starbucks, and 5 people win that every month. And because of that, it like sort of reinforces this behavior of show up, be kind, right? Give someone a drink and you get something back. Gifting, where people are gifting them to each other, which is the sort of vibe we want to go for. And then rewarding participation. So we have beans as mods, just like everybody else. So, you know, the mods and the community lead and the program leads, when people are being awesome at the end of the month, like we're going to gift them beans. We're going to, you know, see people helping each other. We're going to give them beans, that sort of thing. All of this thing gets them raffle entries, and those people might win 1,000 stars. And it incentivizes this good behavior in the Discord where people are automatically helping each other. So it's sort of this daily reminder that even if somebody comes in upset, even if somebody has a bad day, it's like, they give someone a coffee, they're probably going to get one back. And this virtual coffee gets them these sort of entries into the raffle. So things like that with the daily active users, you know, letting the NFT nerds like myself split off into a section called Market Talk, like those sorts of things. So I think one thing is we've responded to what we've seen. People want to talk NFTs and market. We create a market talk. They want to show their drinks. You show off your drinks. People want to go talk about cup collecting, which is a whole underground world in Starbucks. Let's make a cup collecting channel. And then beyond that, it's just providing experiences and opportunities. And last thing I'll say is it's staying consistent. Because I think with a lot of Discords, you have these long periods of time where there's no activity, no anything. And the goal is to create a true digital third place, because Starbucks, you know, wants to be the third place for people. And a digital third place means that people can connect from all over the country, not bound by a local Starbucks, but can actually connect in this sort of virtual coffee shop together. And so because of that, you know, it's awesome and it keeps me busy. It's like, we're doing a trivia night tonight. We're going to do artist interviews in a little bit. We're always bringing in teasers, giving them things early. We're doing games where we reveal different benefits you're getting, where it's a word search or an emoji puzzle. And all of those things keep people coming back to sort of play and have fun. And so I think it's just staying active and making it a welcoming place for people and ensuring that the community stays, you know, in the correct mindset. So I think all of those things are sort of different recipes we try to integrate, and we'll continue to evolve as we see the community evolve to make sure that we're staying up to date with what they need.
I think you've definitely figured out how to harness, you know, that power of community. That's amazing. Really, really cool stuff. Can people still sign up? And by the way, when I talk about like the power of community, I want to make clear that this is applicable to everything that you're doing in the space, not just with Starbucks, but all of those examples are amazing, of what you are doing with Starbucks. I think that's really cool. But can people still sign up?
Yeah. So if you go, it's like waitlist.starbucks.com or something, but if you just Google Starbucks Odyssey waitlist, you're going to put in an email that matches your Starbucks rewards account email. And they're just pushing out emails like crazy. So you get an invite to the program for a little bit. And then you, after that, will be able to get an invite to Discord within a few weeks after that. And then we can start mixing it up with the fun community we're curating.
Okay, cool. That was a very selfish personal question, because I tried to sign up a long time ago and I never got an email back. So now I'm like, can I still do it or is it too late? All right. I'm going to try that again.
Oh, yeah, go for it. Get in there and pop in and just make sure it matches your rewards account. That's the biggest thing we have, is people won't have a rewards account set up, or they won't have the email that sets up. And, you know, we were lucky because we've been in, before I was working there, I was in the program because, you know, Joe Bunchu, he's one of my DJ Network co-founders, and the alpha testing group before anybody was in way back in like November, December, was they just gave it to all the people at DJ Network because we knew that that was the kind of vibe we wanted to kick off and have sort of leaders in the Starbucks Discord. So that was like the earliest group in the Starbucks Odyssey sort of, you know, testing group and getting into the Discord. So yeah, it's a good vibe. And it has, well, the most wonderful part I'll tell you is like, there's like a group of like 5 to 10 people. And I mean, it's like the thing, I love all my children, but there is a group of 5 to 10 people in that Discord who have met from across the country. Some are from LA, some are from Chicago, some are from other places. And they wouldn't have known each other prior to Starbucks Odyssey, right? That's not something that they don't know each other from anywhere else. And they've become friends, and they're like, so like, these are people who like will dig in and find and speculate on what's coming next and do fan theories and try to dig and find all the information. And they become these, like, you know, Seth Godin has this book called Tribes, and he talks about how eventually leaders in a community of any sort, and this is prior to Web3, obviously, leaders of any community is going to need these sub-community leaders, because you can't run the whole tribe yourself, especially as the tribe extends in size, right? It's the idea of like why we have localized governments and things like that. These people just automatically stepped into this role, and we appreciate them. We try to tell them as much as we can, but we appreciate them more than they know, because if we put out information, now it's like I have a mod team, and, you know, a lot of the time I jump in and I go to answer a question, and within seconds, one of these other people has answered the question because they know what the official answer is, and they're trying to help the community and put them on their back and be like leaders in this program for this company that they love. And just watching them, one, all become friends from across the country in this decentralized manner is exactly what NFTs are all about. And then two, the fact that they are so into this thing, It warms the cockles of my heart when I think about it. It's just like one of those things where I'm just like, these people are awesome. So I don't know. That's been probably the coolest part of the community, is this like 5 to 10, like they created a website called odysseytips.com because, you know, Starbucks only has certain legal limits of things they post, stuff like that. They can do whatever they want. You go to odysseytips.com, they have resources there. that like help people get started, that they direct them to, and this is what we know so far, and filling in blanks and all these different things. So it's just, I don't know. They're absolutely phenomenal. And I couldn't ask for a better community. It's like the most vibes up community, like I think I've ever been in.
That's amazing. You have also talked about those community vibes for Board 8 Yacht Club. I think in the past, I've heard you talk about how, you know, you used it as a way to connect and network and meet new people and really tap into what that power of community can do and did for you to launch into a lot of different things in the space. Talk to us about that.
Yeah, I think with a lot of things with, you know, people ask me questions like, is your Board Ape Yacht Club worth the price, or is a mutant worth the price? And my answer is, it depends. It depends on how you're using it. For me personally, I got one when I was, you know, it's funny how floor price works too. I bought one when it was like $1,000 because I didn't buy it on primary. I got it on secondary, and there's some long stories behind that. But long story short, like I got one for $1,000 in secondary, almost didn't get it. And I was just pumped to be part of this club and this community and these people that I felt like were just these like-minded, you know, geeky people, these, you know, Josh Hongs and Baron Von Hustles of the world and Zed Gazettes and these people who were teaching me about crypto and NFTs. I would answer every dumb question I had. Like it was relatively, you know, I knew these people were all like these people I looked up to and admired before I had a Bored Ape. And then before Bored Ape even existed, they were helping educate me. And then along comes Bored Ape, right? And they all have this profile picture and I just had to have one. So I got one for $1,000. The funny part was my friends, I remember that summer we had over our house and they were like, turn to my wife who is the ultimate ride or die. So they were barking up the wrong tree, but they were like, you're okay with him spending $1,000 on a monkey picture? And she was like, yeah, I mean, why wouldn't I? Like, he always does his research. He's really thoughtful. Then it went to like $5,000. And she's like, they're like, are you going to make him sell it? And she's like, no, I'm not going to make him sell this. Like, no, absolutely not. Then it was like $50,000. And they're like, how do we get into NFTs? So it was like, this funny how financial stuff works like that, right? But the way I use the community in the most positive way is like, when there were private chats spinning up, incubators, things like that, there was this energy when it came out. Like Chris, my co-host, Captain, Chris Jordan, Captain Zwingli, always describes it as like, I feel like I've joined like a unicorn startup with like 5,000 of my closest friends, right? And it's the closest thing since college that we can remember where it's like, you know, meeting all these new people and all these new things. So I think like with that, it was like, I felt that energy. So I would get in these private discords, these private chats where people were like, hey, what can apes do together? And I was like, you know, and that's where I found and met Chris and where I met Joe. And, you know, again, like founded DGen Network with them. But also like Joe's the one who founded Forum 3, which led to Starbucks Odyssey. So for me personally, I've just showed up to the rooms, the events, because I wanted to work in this world. I had the conversations. I had a long-term goal. So I very much avoided short. Like when people were in your DMs during the bull market and ETH was $4,000 and people were like, I will give you 2 ETH to promote this project, which seemed very sketchy, I said no. And I probably cost myself a lot of short-term money on that shit. But long-term, like, my goal is to be here doing it the right way the whole time. Now, don't get me wrong. I've done, like, paid disclosed promotions with people who I trust, right? Like, Josh Hong, who I mentioned, his company Boardroom Ventures does everything above board. And I've worked with them a little bit. And DGen's worked with them. We're always trying to pull it back to DGen. But anyway, point being, long story short, I mean, like, it's showing up, it's working hard. If you want to build around your IP, you've got a group of built-in product testers. Your product has to deliver, but ultimately, like, it's a thing where I've just never, I don't know, like, I've never felt anything quite like it. When I used to go to industry events when I was in marketing, I'll just be honest, I would go to like content marketing world and I would be with my team and we'd divide and conquer and we'd sit by ourselves and we'd reconvene and we'd be very siloed. When I go to award shows, like when they were like giving out like, you know, the prisms and, you know, silver anvils and those things back in PR, you know, it's like it almost became a pissing contest where everybody was just competitive talking and one-upping each other. I go to these events and everybody is genuinely happy to see each other. You know, like I'm looking, you know, I see Tebow, I see Laura, you know, I see all these people in the audience right now. And all of these people are people who I saw this weekend. And all of us are like, how can we help each other? What are we working on? What can we do? How can... Those moments are what it's all about. So I don't know. Like it's those are the moments that really matter. It's like you see people like that in person, IRL, and you're like, you know, I see Ellie down there who I met at Art Basel, and it's like the genuineness of the conversation. None of them are related to how, like let me like anybody who's sort of bragging or trying to like make themselves be better than everybody else, like immediately everyone's like that person's kind of an asshole. But like most people are just trying to help each other these things. So it's like I showed up, I swung the bat, I kind of asked the questions and where can I help people and where can I be kind and try to like, you know, help lift others up. And I feel like I end up getting the same back. And I feel like in the Bored Ape Yacht Club, there's just been this genuine sense of compersion where people root for each other and they're happy for each other. And I think, you know, that's sort of the power of community. It's like I said, I went to a brunch to give a very tangible example. I went to a brunch that our friend Nir put on, who's a lawyer down in, you know, her and this Ray, who's another ape, like that they put on. Ray is the founder of Layer One Blockchain. And they sponsored this brunch they put on where we got, you know, this amazing food on the water of Miami. And like, first of all, like 15 people show up, like five of them have Bored Ape branded projects. They're just dumping on the table. So we're getting honey and trail mix and chocolate and all this other stuff that they're building. And they're like, hey, check this out. Coffee, all those things. Then like, there's a moment in time where Chris, my sort of, you know, my Coffee with Captain co-host is talking to the guy who owns Bored Bagels, who's a very successful Philadelphia entrepreneur, as like restaurants and bagel shops and all this stuff before Web3. And they're sitting there talking about shipping logistics for a project that they both are interested in. And it's like, where else in the world would a Philadelphia entrepreneur, successful restaurateur be explaining to a Tampa Bay franchisee, like how to have shipping logistics for a product they're working? It just would never happen. But this club sort of brings us together. You know, the analogy is like, if you join a golf club, which is the closest analog a lot of people have for this, you join a golf club, you probably golf with the same 5 to 7 people every single time you golf. You still pay for golf. There's an annual due fee. You know, it's not like a lifetime membership that you bought once. There is a minimum spend inside like the grill or whatever. And you probably don't know 75% of the people who are in your club. This is so different than that. It's decentralized. It's a country that's not based on the piece of dirt you were born on, but what you want to be involved with and who you are and who you vibe with. And I think it's just such a powerful way you can sort of take that community and pull it together and become this, I don't know, this decentralized world that we have. So I, that's the way I've just generally used it. I've shown up to these things, I've offered value, I've gotten value, and I'm always sort of, you know, looking for that.
And I think that that's the reason that it continues to be as strong as it is. And, you know, in my mind, will continue to always stay that strong. It's the people who are building within it and are committed to helping other people. At the end of the day, it's that community that makes it stronger and strong to begin with. So I love that story because it opens up doors to a lot of people from all over the world. And, you know, it opens up doors that they otherwise would never have been able to have any access to. So I really like that. I know that we're coming up on an hour. I want to be respectful of your time. Talk to us about DJ Network. How many shows do you have at this point? I don't even know. Like every day there's a new calendar. How many shows are there now?
Oh God, I don't know. I always forget the number of months. It should be 6, but because we just added one more, it might be more. So every day, Monday through Friday, we have Coffee with Captain. Every Monday through Friday at noon, we have Lunch Break. That's Jay Webb and Riggs, who are another couple of, you know, a Moonbird and Ape, prominent Moonbird and Ape. Riggs sits on the Moonbird Council, and Jay Webb has been an ape since almost the beginning. 3 days a week, we have the Mint Condition, which is one of the earliest podcasts. And now the US Spaces in crypto, right, in NFTs. It was just one that, like, before everybody was talking about it, Mint Condition's been there. We have Night Shift, which is sort of a later night show that actually is more of a trading DGen show. Saturday Morning Cartoons, that's going to be Dental Tornado. Omi and Dan the Lost Boy are kind of the hosts there. They do a positivity mental health space. Although all these topics are always on point for anybody. Today, Riggs and J-Web did a really good mental health deep dive for, I think, 45 minutes of their show, which is awesome. We just added a football show, which is Thursday, Sunday, and Monday. So J-Web, who hosts Lunch Break, was like, hey, I want to do like DGen bets and just be idiots. And I'm like, look, I'm the meatball who loses all my money betting and is terrible at it. And I represent the normal person who's getting, cause like J-Webb's a sharp better. I think he's been kicked off betting sites for being too good. Bunchu's a smart better. He's, you know, been kicked off betting sites for betting too good. Chris Kapp is going to host part of it. And Phonics, another member of DJ Network who's a night shift. those two have gotten tax forms from DraftKings, meaning that they've done well enough that they've had to like file tax against it. And I'm the guy who puts in $250 at the beginning of the year, and then I hope that I have money left over to roll over into next year at the end of it. And sometimes I do, and sometimes I don't. So like, I'm the kind of the typical meatball who's not very good at this. So I'm hosting on Thursday nights just to, you know, get as much value from them as I can while also, you know, it's funny. They're like, don't bet with emotion. And I was like, example, I found out that Ohio State's top wide receiver went to high school with their probably starting quarterback. So I bet like $20 on an Ohio State future. Immediate emotion. I went to school there. I wanted to win. It's like the opposite of what you're supposed to do. But like, so I always am doing like the thing that should totally be faded. But they were laughing at me. I even said, you know, are we going to do bets on the show tomorrow night? Because I already have 12 bets placed. I'm ready to go. So I'm sort of that idiot degen in the group, and everybody else is really sharp. But I think that brings us up to 7 individual show titles. And yeah, I mean, we're just trying to roll along and give everybody a voice. It's like I said, it came out of an idea that, you know, we want, whether someone wanted to write one tweet thread or write all the time and have it live in perpetuity and get signal boosted by a group of other people, that you should sign up for DGEN Network. Like, no promise of any monetary gain, anything like that. But like, you know, we've had shows that have come on our network that on the front end of the show, they had, you know, maybe like 2 or 3 people who showed up to a space, and then they joined DGEN, and our crowd, which travels pretty well, shows up, and they have 100 people in and out of a space now. And so going from like 4 or 5 to 100 is like, that's the only thing we ever promise under DGEN. We have gotten sponsorships, and our goal is always to take those sponsorships and hit them to our contributors. You know, I did Coffee with Captain, you know, at one point we're doing, during the bull run, we're doing, you know, 1,200 to 2,000 people every single morning as an audience in and out. And in my first like year and a half of Coffee with Captain, I think I made all of $500 on sponsorships, but we had been able to pay the rest of the network people some negotiations. In fact, we had a negotiation relatively recently. We turned something down that didn't seem like a very good fit for DGEN. And then we also did another sponsorship, which we are going to do. And they wanted Coffee with Captain, and we went back and negotiated the whole network because, you know, why should Chris and I get paid but not everybody else? And how can we get everybody else involved? So we've sort of always done it that way. It's never going to make us all rich. In fact, if Coffee with Captain was an independent entity, I'd have a lot more money, but that's not the way we look at it. We want everybody to be able to have a voice and get those diverse perspectives and opinions out there. And the goal is like, how can we have as many different types of, you know, different people and different voices in different areas talking about what's going on in the market. And that can be NFT related, tech related, whatever they want to cover. So, you know, we kind of kick it around that way, and it's been fun. But again, by no means is it like a major profitable venture if you're like a content creator, but our goal is like, how can we help give an audience a voice? And then if we get the chance, at least some sort of payout to people if we have the opportunity to do so.
What kind of tips would you give to creators, you know, particularly with X now launching the monetization of it and talking about how Twitter Spaces could be a big avenue for that, the tipping, et cetera. Potentially, we don't know exactly what's going to happen, but potentially Twitter Spaces or X Spaces will play a big part of that. And, I would expect that a lot of content creators jump into hosting more Twitter Spaces, et cetera, et cetera. What tips would you give to launching it, to hosting it, to, you know, scaling it and keeping the audience numbers that you do have?
At least for us, I mean, consistency matters. And you know that as well as anybody, but consistency matters. You know, since December, I think 3rd, of 2021. So now it's like a year and a half later, coming up on 2 years later. Either Chris or myself has been on every single episode, and we have not missed a Monday through Friday. Now there's times when he was on a cruise in Europe and couldn't make it. There's times when I was on a cruise in the Caribbean and couldn't make it because learned that cruise ship Wi-Fi is extremely bad. It wasn't even the time difference. I even said on the cruise, I'm like, I'm going to do the show. I'll find a way to do the show. I always find a way to do the show. In fact, when we went to Disney with my family, there was a weird noise going back and forth because I was walking back and forth from one of the hotels that we were at all the way to Magic Kingdom and back. And the monorail is going over my head because I was walking 4 or 5 miles trying to get away to do the show in the morning just for a few hours. Because my family, I'm lucky, sleeps in a little bit usually. So, you know, I didn't have to like ditch away at Disney or anything like that. But, you know, those are the types of things where it's like, hey, I'm exhausted. We went to fireworks at 11 o'clock and or what, at 9 o'clock or whatever, then hung out till 11 and had a glass of wine and I wake up hurting. But if I don't have an excuse to miss the show, I'm not missing the show. And Chris is very much the same way. So I think consistency, number one. Number two, I think your vibe attracts your tribe. Like, we're never going to be the biggest Twitter space because, you know, we're not going to yell. We're not going to scream at each other. Our mantra is to disagree without being disagreeable. And everybody's voice matters. And unless you're being a total jerk, we're going to hear you out. We're going to try to, you know, play out what you're saying. Like, even the other day on the show, there was somebody who was pretty off base, but I tried to tease out the point they were making and make sure they were heard and make sure they were understood. And, you know, those are the things that I think are important in, you know, how we do it our way. And again, I always say nothing's one size fits all. Like, to me, like, consistency, showing up, and, you know, like, trying to get those sort of, like, growth hacks in general. Like, the way that I grew in this, you know, space was I was constantly churning out content via, you know, articles for DGen. I was constantly showing up to Twitter spaces every free moment I had. My mentality the past 3 years, and will continue for the next 2 to 3, is we are in this unprecedented time where I can send a DM to a founder and they're probably going to answer. Imagine if I could send a DM to Mark Zuckerberg and get an answer, you know, back in, you know, 2004, 2005. It would be crazy, right? Imagine that you could do that now. You can. And so my point of view is we're never going to have this time again. So yeah, I'm probably going to work a little harder. I'm going to exhaust myself a little bit. I'm going to run a little faster towards the goal, knowing that the light at the end of the tunnel is this won't last forever. And if I don't do it, somebody else will. Now, it doesn't mean do everything. It means that the things that I truly want to do, like I'm already pretty close to capacity right now. And something came up recently, and I won't get into it, that I thought, geez, that would be cool to work on. And my wife, being supportive as hell, repeated back to me when I was like, what do you think? And she said, well, you said yourself that this time isn't going to last forever. So if you want to go for this and you think this is valuable to do it, you should do it. So I'm probably going to do it. It's going to be a lot of work, but it's going to be something really rewarding and something cool and like a really awesome moment. So like, you know, it's like, yes to Starbucks, yes to DGen, yes to the book, yes to the Harvard Business Review article, yes to like, you know, this other thing that I'm looking at, because right now it's like this wonderful time. So for me, it's like growing, scaling, and getting people to show up the space is sort of an amalgamation of showing up every day. I'm here on Twitter. I'm talking. I'm replying to people. I'm not just like putting out content. Like, I'm actually reading people's thoughts and trying to have two-way conversation. I'm replying to the people who reply to me. I showed up, again, for a period of time before I had all this work, I showed up to every single Twitter space I could and didn't try to steal the show. It's their barbecue. I'm just bringing a side. But I would raise my hand, make my point, get off stage, and you would end up having people, you know, sort of, you know, you would pick up more followers that way. And then you would put out content. Then you put out a thread. Then you would show up IRL and meet people and show them you're the same person online that you are offline. And all of those things combined, I think, are sort of this, like, it's like not any one factor. It's sort of like when you try to do multi-touch attribution in advertising and PR and things. It's like there's so many things that go into the machine. And yes, you could take one element out, but it's hard for me to say like what's gotten people to tune in, because I think it's a combination of people I meet in real life, people I've met in Twitter spaces, people who read the content, people who discover it through CAP, like all these other things. But like consistency, like hard work, and then just being kind and empathetic are like the three things at a high level that I really try to breathe into that.
Well, you are officially part of the If You Know, You Know family. So if there's ever anything that we can do to support you, please, you know, reach out and let me know. We're all, I am all about helping other people in the space and rooting for other people in the space, because you know, I have a strong belief that if one of us wins, we all win. And I love to see what you guys are building, and I love to see the support that you're getting, and I love to see the support that you're giving other people. So I'm going to take all those tips to heart, and I hope that everybody else does. Tell us about, before I let you go, tell us about the book that you are co-writing.
Yeah, so the book is going to be about, so the book itself is with my Harvard Business Review co-author, Scott Commoners. He's a Harvard Business School professor, a brilliant guy, also an A16Z research partner. So Scott and I met on a Twitter space. I've never met IRL. We wrote a 200, with endnotes, our book is 250 pages, 210 total really with writing or so, 200 to 210 writing. And the idea is for somebody who does not understand NFTs, has never been in this world, doesn't know crypto, what are NFTs? How can my business use them? So really business people, or anybody who wants to understand them. So, you know, the idea is that whether you are, you know, Dunkin' Donuts or the local coffee shop. You can pick up this book, read it. There's a framework. There's an explanation. There's a point of making sure that people know that, you know, crypto is not this big scam. Understand the details of how everything works, and then provide some actionable tips to start it. So it's going to be actionable. We did our best to make it so it's not super time bound. We're hoping that it's more like a Gary Vaynerchuk jab, 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 right hook, which he wrote for about social media, which is like, look, yes. The examples may get data, or Jonah Berger has a phenomenal, UPenn professor has a phenomenal book called Contagious, one of my favorite marketing books. And yes, the examples might get dated, but the actual framework itself still stands. So we feel good about the framework, and we've gotten really good feedback from everyone who's read it so far, our test readers and some others. So, you know, very much looking forward to ultimately getting that thing. It'll be on shelves officially January 28th, I believe. And then we'll be talking about pre-sale maybe pretty soon, but we might wait until December, just because that way people aren't waiting too long to get their books. So we're going to try to be careful about that. But yeah, we're super pumped about it. I mean, it's something that I think is, you know, it's like a lifelong dream. And Penguin Publishing, one of the world's largest publishers doing it, our editor wasn't a crypto native person. So her not being crypto native made it so that, like, she could tell us, like, this is too inside baseball. This makes sense. And yeah, like, it's honestly, I'm really bad at taking compliments or giving myself compliments. Like, when people say nice things to me, I don't feel it. I feel like they're patronizing me, which they're not. They're just trying to be kind, but it's an issue. It's a me issue. I probably need to talk to a therapist about that, like, all seriousness. But, but the truth is like, this is the one thing I can think about, like that Harvard Business Review article and this, that I can say, you know what? I'm pretty fucking proud of that. Like, I'm really, really proud of this book we wrote. It like, the book slaps. So I'm looking forward to it coming out. And here's the good news. If a bunch of us degens buy it, like if a few thousand of us degens buy it, then that book ends up on the Wall Street Journal bestseller list. And then all of the business executives see it there and then they buy it. And maybe we get a little bit closer to that sort of mass adoption and using this technology for good. So that's the hope.
All right. Well, I love that. Yeah, absolutely. We should get all of the DJs to buy it. It's funny that you say that you don't take compliments, because I was picking up on that. So I'm going to reverse that and say that, you know, everything that you have done up until now has been nothing and you need to do better. And then when you get to that better part, come back so that I can shower you with some more uncomfortable love, because you guys are doing an amazing job. Congratulations, Steve, on all of your success. Truly happy to support everything that you guys are doing, everything that you are personally accomplishing. You know, like I told you in the beginning of the show, you seem like a very just genuine, nice, cool person. So it's been an honor to have you up here. Is there anything else that we could do to support you in your journey?
No, I mean, just follow me on Twitter. I guess the biggest thing that I'm being told by my editor to do right now, because we're working on some stuff, is, you know, it's my pinned tweet, but on my profile, or just go to bookaboutnfts.com. We bought the most obvious URL. Not a lot of information out there. It's extremely bare bones by design. There's an email list there. Put in your email. And when we have the book up for pre-sale, we will contact that list. It's getting a decent size, so we'll let people know when that comes out. And then the best thing people can do for me is buying a, you know, if you want to buy the book at retail cost at $30, awesome, when it comes out. Or if people want to buy bulks, I can get a whole lot of bulk discounts we can talk about. So things like that is the best things people can do for me, because that's what's going to allow my career to advance and continue to write more books. That's going to allow NFTs to be more widely accepted by people. I know for a fact that business leaders and executives at companies passed around that Harvard Business Review article and sort of passed that around high-level circles, and it did a little bit for NFTs. And I'm hoping that this book will be the next iteration of that and we're able to do it. So crossing my fingers, but the best thing people can do, go to bookaboutnfts.com or go to my profile, click on that, sign up for that email list. And as soon as we have the pre-sale up, or as soon as we get the go-ahead, and as soon as we get a website up or something, we will blast it out to that group and hopefully start getting the pre-sales incoming.
All right. There you go, everybody. Make sure that you go to that website, Book About NFTs. I love how simple that is. You really are a marketing genius, because that is very, very smart. If you haven't already, make sure that you are following Steve, that you are following me, and that you're going to be collecting today's Space Caps POAP. Don't forget, go out there, retweet that, comment, make sure that you get that and start collecting them so you can, you know, after you get five, for every five that you get, then you get those airdrops. So if you haven't already, make sure that you're following all of that. Stay tuned for all of the other amazing speakers that we have on every single week. We have on amazing speakers and topics lined up for you. We're coming up on the 100th episode, hoping to do something really cool and different and special for everybody. So if this is your first time, thank you so much for joining us. We do this show every single Wednesday at 1 p.m. Central Standard Time. So if you didn't know, now you know. I'll see you guys next week. Have a good one, everybody. Bye.